the first annual champion of the state championship prediction pool, JP Cadoran here on Initial Reaction, your favorite podcast for listening to me gloat over my dear friend J.R. Radcliffe.
Yes. So for those of you, but yes, I am J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and now newspapers. For those of you who are regular listeners to our podcast, you may have heard our level four draft last week, our inaugural level four draft, where we picked five teams from the pool of semifinalists around the state and the most state championships won. Well, yay, after just the semifinal round, JP,
not even a competition.
JP has four teams left. They play each other. He has the two D3 and D1 finalists. He will get two state champions. It's guaranteed. It's set in stone. Meanwhile, four of my five teams lost. I still have Amherst, but I have a maximum of one potential state championship, and I have been defeated by JP.
I have a minimum and a maximum of two. So
yes, you limited yourself. Nice. You played it that way. You really sort of hedged your bets, whereas I went for the home run and I struck out like Chris Carter would.
Yes, you did. So instead, I will win, just like seven teams will win over the next few days at Camp Randall, in basically early October type weather. This is unbelievably unheard of, which makes me even more excited to get up there and cover it.
It's going to be an interesting day because it's going to start in the 50s and 60s and maybe sink all the way down to the low 40s by the end of the day. So Division I, the Franklin-Kimberly matchup, might be a little chillier than what we see in Division III when Catholic Memorial takes on Green Bay Notre Dame. But we will both be there for all three of those games on Friday. The not mentioned there would be the Brookfield-East Monona Grove Division II battle between the two bookends there. And it's going to be a pretty great day. I don't know. I could not sit here and safely predict any of those games. I think, you know, it comes back to Kimberly is probably the heavy favorite in D1 still, but Franklin's really dang good and has shown it in the playoffs, and I honestly would not feel confident choosing any three of the three winners in these games.
So what's your headline? What is somebody who maybe has interest in high school football but doesn't follow the results, doesn't know who's good and who's not, what is your 140 character tweet that they need to know about the state finals?
That's a tough one. I think last year, that Catholic Memorial Notre Dame game last year would have been the thing we were all talking about from state tournament weekend, except two games later we have the Arrowhead-Kimberly battle where Kimberly scores four times in the second half to rally from a three-touchdown deficit and win in what I think can be called the greatest state final game ever, certainly the greatest one I've been to, and I've been to some pretty good ones. So I think the game last year kind of got lost in the shuffle. This is a big redemption tour for Catholic Memorial to get another chance at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is a very good football team. Very, very good. Their resume is spectacular. And CMH is as good as it has ever been. But they lost last year because of some really bizarre mistakes. Four interceptions that short-circuited some huge moments for them where they could have scored. I mean, they had the ball basically on the Notre Dame goal line, up a score with 4 minutes left. I mean, how did they not win that game? And then when Notre Dame gets the turnover in the end zone, they go three huge plays to get down the field for a touchdown, including a simultaneous catch that could have gone either way. So that game was bonkers, and we forget about it because what came later was so bonkers. I think that game is really your highlight. I think this is a big opportunity for Catholic Memorial to get a gold ball that they probably had in their grasp last year and let get away.
Yeah, not sure how you fit all that into 140 characters, but well said.
A lot of abbreviating. There's a big acronym in there somewhere.
There are lots of abbreves.
Lots of abbreves. Yeah.
I mean, I think last year was really something. You had Waukesha West Homestead in D2, which was a good game as well, because I think Homestead scored, it was like 20 points in 5 minutes or something like that, or maybe 14. I don't know. I just remember there was a flurry of everything going their way in a short amount of time, but it's funny that you bring up Catholic Memorial. That's where I was Friday night while you were in the warmth of state volleyball. I was out at Kettle Moraine High School to watch Pewaukee take on Catholic Memorial, and the Crusaders are a very good football team. Pewaukee and CMH are roughly the same size, but as a lot of people would and will and have point out, they are not made up of the same type of students. Probably due to the public-private thing, and CMH showed that it is a team that has been to this point before and have a lot of talented kids, starting probably first with Jalen Campbell, the running back, and his four touchdowns, closely followed by, is it Max Cooper, their wide receiver, who's very, very good. So they are good. And after the game, I was surprised that Coach Bill Young, who's been there forever, one of the legends in high school football in Wisconsin, I was surprised in his little huddle after the win, he brought up last year. He said, you know, like, remember that feeling. You know, that's what we're going to go correct next week. So I was, you know, you don't know how coaches apply or, you know, approach these things. You know, they could choose to ignore it. They could kind of reference it, or they could really use it. And it looks like Coach Young is really using it.
You mentioned Pewaukee. We were a little remiss to have not teased out the interview we have coming later in this podcast. Former Pewaukee athlete and now in the University of Wisconsin Athletic Office, Chris McIntosh, who talks a lot about Badgers, talked about Pewaukee, talked about playing in the NFL. He's a former first-round draft pick at the Seattle Seahawks. We got a really great, meaty interview with him. So that's coming up here toward the end of the podcast. Wanted to mention that. But yes, Catholic Memorial, I would pick them to win again. I would pick them to win. I picked them to win last year. And were it not for a couple fluky plays, I think they would have. And so that's what he's saying. Make sure that you don't let those fluky plays catch you off guard this year. I mean, they could have lost that level 2 game to Wisconsin Lutheran because of a couple interceptions and a couple of plays, a muffed punt by the kid who ended up kicking a game-winning 51-yard field goal. I mean, that game was dramatic because Catholic Memorial did make mistakes. So as good as they are, they're still prone to those from time to time, but then of course in level 3 and level 4 they play dominant games and blew out the competition. So they're a very good football team.
Yeah, and the one last thing is that the last time CMH won was in 2012. That's when this year's senior class were in 8th grade. So they were. I talked to Jalen Campbell again. He said that he was at the game. You know, he was in the stands. He remembers what that environment was like, and he would very much like to be a part of that once again. So. They are good. Notre Dame is a team that I follow because they are in our Green Bay market, so I'm well aware of what they can do as well, and they are pretty good, just the same. I think I don't know if they went undefeated or not, but they have been a favorite, in the Green Bay area basically the entire year as well. So, CMH does have a stiff challenge. Like you, I will predict them to win, which is why I picked them in my prediction pool draft thing. But it should be fun. I don't know what to call it, but no, that'll be fun. I'm excited for that game. That'll be a good start to the day.
Nate Eilenfeldt, I don't know quite how you say it, but Notre Dame's running back. He was lost early in the title game last year as a junior with an injury. So Notre Dame won despite missing him, which was another impressive part of the equation. I think he broke his collarbone in the title game last year, but he's one of the best running backs in the state. Their only loss this year is a really close call to Bayport, a very good Division I team that we thought was going to be in level 4 and got upset by Stevens Point. But still, that's a very quality loss. And at the same time, Catholic Memorial beat up on D1 teams and D2 teams in the Classic 8, won the Classic 8 title outright for the first time since 2000. So this is a pretty great team, even though they're small in stature, going up against some big boys. Division 2.
And I can't believe in D2 that Brookfield East, never been to D4, never been to state, and they have a good chance of winning it with a first-year head coach. That's just crazy to me. Somebody I haven't seen them play all year, save for our live games on Time on our cable sports channel, but I haven't seen them in person. So that's crazy to me that they're in this position. So please tell me why I am not crazy.
I have no evidence that you're not crazy. I think you're insane, but that's beside the point for this. Brookfield East, we talk about them a lot about Sam Santiago Lloyd, and I think rightfully he plays both ways. He's a linebacker. He's an all-state running back. He was a tremendous talent last year when he put up some eye-popping numbers, our all suburban player of the year. Was injured in the middle of the season this year, and it wasn't clear if he would get all the way back to health or when. And so Brookfield East struggled a little bit. They lost a couple games in the greater metro season, got blown out by Brookfield Central, then lost a heartbreaker in overtime to Marquette. And now that Santiago Lloyd is healthy, they've been making this move. And, you know, we talk a lot about him, but that whole defense is amazing. I mean, they held Menominee, which puts up 40 points a game. They held Menominee to 13 points in level 4 last week. And Brookfield East probably could have won that game by more. They also had some key mistakes, some very key mistakes that could have paid huge dividends and cost them the game. They won 20-13. So that defense hasn't maybe gotten enough credit. I mean, they shut out Brookfield Central in level 3 after ceding 40-some points in the regular season to them, and they really stepped up when it mattered. So this team is playing out of its mind right now, and it's a chance for Santiago Lloyd to cement his legacy, but as well as the other players. Groff, the quarterback, has had a very good year. And this team has really good offensive line play, defensive line play, and it's just a toss-up because Monona Grove is kind of on the same thing, a Cinderella run of its own. They were a fifth seed, and they're just crushing people. Haven't even played a home game in the playoffs. Madison's the closest they'll be to home throughout the playoffs, and they've just been crushing people. So it's tough to know who to pick in that one as well.
So my question for you then is about Sam, and I just feel like he's a candidate to just kind of break out and be – I mean, it sucks that this is the next person that I go to, but like to be that next Joe Schobert of somebody that almost nobody has heard of. And then now Schobert's big moment happened, I guess, and it did happen in the state title game, but then it really happened in the All-Star game after that. Is Santiago Lloyd in the same boat where if he has a big game, this could mean enormous things for his football future? I mean, because I know that he's that good. I know that watching him, he's an absolute tank. He runs through people. He doesn't run over them. He just completely obliterates them. So I've seen him play. Is that a fair comparison to make?
Absolutely. I think without a doubt. Because remember, Joe Schobert was outstanding in that state title game as a junior. He broke the rushing record. And then it wasn't until a year later, even after that tremendous performance as a junior, it wasn't until a year later, really a year and a half later in the summer at the All-Star game where he started to catch the eyes of the right people in the Wisconsin coaching fraternity, and then that got up to Brett Bielema. He was offered a walk-on opportunity at Wisconsin. But I think there's no question about it because it's the same situation. Sam Santiago Lloyd doesn't have a prototypical college football body. He's not 6'2". He's not built quite like you'd think of a college football player to be built. And at the same time, he's demonstrated time and time again his athleticism, his toughness, all these things to put up these whack-a-mole numbers and to also shred people on defense. I mean, how many guys are the player of the year on both sides of the ball in a conference and then don't have any college, Division I college offers a year later? I mean, I don't really know where we're at with him if he has fielded some smaller offers. But, Schobert was going to walk on at North Dakota, and he's playing on Sundays now. It's amazing how quickly things can turn. I think you're right on the nose there. I think a great Division I or Division II title game is going to go a long way toward maybe getting that kid noticed by the right people.
Yeah, so it's convenient for us that he's playing against a team from Madison because we can just cheer. We can fully cheer for them as opposed if it was two Milwaukee teams or for me if it was a team against Fox Valley, I would have a hard time. But since Brookfield East is playing against Monona Grove, I am fully on that, and I'm kind of rooting just for him. I hope he has that breakout game. I just went on Rivals right now. It says he's undecided and doesn't list any sort of major offers at all. So I think this could be really cool. And the other thing, the other comparison, just from pure looking at him and his position, maybe reminds me a little bit of Alec Ingold from Bayport, who's now kind of a fullback for the Badgers. I just think, oh my goodness, can you imagine Santiago Lloyd instead of Ingold? I mean, I have to imagine that Santiago Lloyd can be a little bit better than Ingold is at it. So maybe there's a chance there. I mean, Rivals does list him as a fullback, so maybe there's a chance.
Maybe Ingold had more size. I mean, that's a state champion 220-pound wrestler right there. So Ingold is a much bigger cat than
Sonny. He's taller, Lloyd. Yeah.
Taller, yep. And I do think that is important because they look at the frame on the next level. How much, look at a guy like J.J. Watt, who was tall but not necessarily big, and then, of course, you go to college and that frame just fills out. So that's the projectability is what the problem is there. But yeah, I certainly think he's a guy who can compete at a high level. And if not, he's going to be the best player in the WEAC someday. He's going to tear people up on the Division III level.
Yeah.
No shame in that. That's high level football at this point. There's three Wisconsin teams in the D3 playoffs, which is a pretty big thing. So that's a possibility for him as well.
Yeah. So I'll be all in on the Spartans on Friday. Division I, I'm not going to be allowed to cheer.
Oh,
I have my Franklin Sabres, I know, and I have my Franklin Sabres and my Kimberly Papermakers. Those are two teams that I've covered for the past basically 8 years now, and I'm not allowed to choose a side and root for one. All I know is I'm looking forward to it, and I hope it's close. We know that Kimberly has their winning streak, which is, I believe, at 55 games right now. But it only takes one game to lose, and then it's all kind of gone from there. So I hope it's just close. Franklin doesn't need to win 55 games. They just need to win one. And no matter who wins, I'm hoping for another close game.
We talked about the job Lewis Brown has done last week, graduating this incredible senior class last year and then leading the following year's team to state. So him and Ben Farley, too, from Brookfield East. I mean, those are the two best coaching stories in the area, hands down, this season. I would not have picked Franklin in this game at any point, but now that I've seen them just destroy people in level 3 and level 4, Marquette and Badger, I don't know if anybody would have said Marquette and or Badger are legitimate threats to win the state title. I don't know if they're in that, like, true elite, at least perceptively true elite class of teams this year, but they're not far from it. If that, you know, if they're not in that list, they're next on the list. So to beat them both handily really opens my eyes about Franklin. I mean, I've been interested in their story all year, but you know, they had to battle a good rivalry battle with Oak Creek in level 2. They had to kind of just scratch and claw their way out of that game, and then they really seemed to turn on the afterburners here in level 3 and level 4 against really good competition. So I'm starting to wonder if they can't be in this game. Obviously, Kimberly's the favorite. They're awesome. They've won 55 in a row. They are the 3-time defending state champ, and they're showing it. But I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if Franklin can make this a really, really competitive game.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I said that after seeing Franklin beat Marquette. I said that they're a lot more dangerous than we thought. I think Max Alba, their quarterback, is really good. Kyle Lewis, my goodness. Did you see those highlights that we were fortunate enough to have on our channel?
I did.
If you didn't, my goodness. Kyle Lewis is a shorter guy, skinnier guy, but when he gets the ball in his hands, it takes a world of effort to tackle him. Some of the highlights, I'm sure we have them on TWCSportsChannel.com. Go there, find the highlights, because his catch and runs, 4 touchdowns, are fantastic. So I highly recommend checking that out. You can do some homework if you'd like to prepare yourself. We also had the Kimberly Stevens Point game, so some good D1 scouting looks if you want to get ready for Friday. But my goodness, I'm just so impressed by what they can do. Friday, we talked about, the forecast isn't fantastic. It's not as great as it was earlier in the day. I think they're calling for 20 to 30 mile an hour winds at some point throughout the day, which won't help. But if they can pass the ball against Kimberly, that should be a fantastic matchup.
Kyle Lewis and Ethan Wittenberg, two of the three or four best receivers, at least total yardage wise now in the area when you add up all their playoff games, and some really great stuff late in the year from Kyle Lewis. I think he just had the 3 catches, all touchdowns against Badger in level 4, and Wittenberg's been racking those up as well this year. Yeah, you're right about the wind could play a role. I mean, I don't know. I think sometimes it's a little easy and cliche to say that the wind affects the passing team more than the running team, which is certainly Kimberly in this case, but although Kimberly's got a great quarterback too, so who knows. But I don't know if that's how it'll play out, but Franklin is definitely a passing team, and they can definitely move the ball through the air with quarterback Max Alba. And if the wind is bad, that could be an impact. Same with D2 with Monona Grove. They can pass the ball with the best of them too, and I'm sure they're not hoping for those high level winds. They're looking for something a little more still inside the Camp Randall Bowl.
I think and for those of you who are just somewhat interested, I think watching this game just for individual talent alone will be worth it. Danny Vandenboom, you just mentioned, Kimberly's quarterback, is going to Wisconsin. They have a lineman going to Wisconsin. They have a lineman going to Northern Illinois, I believe, Logan Bruss and Logan McCormick. Franklin's quarterback, Max Alba, we keep talking about him. I'd say there is a very high chance he will be playing some high major college football, the latest in a line of Franklin quarterbacks to do so, with Lance Barrett, Sean McGuire, who's playing at Western Illinois right now. So if for no other reason, you are going to be seeing a lot of maybe Hawk Wimmer from Franklin, defensive stud. There are a lot of individual names that you will be seeing for quite some time from that Division I game.
So you'll have to check us out on LakeCountryNow.com, MyCommunityNow.com. We've got all kinds of coverage of the state the state finals. We've got previews of all 3 games live on our sites, and I'm sure Time Warner Cable will have all kinds of content for you as well, right, JP?
Oh, you know it. Not only, I mean, right now you can scout out the Division I teams, like I said, watch the Franklin Badger game, watch the Kimberly Spash game, and then, yep, after that we'll be at all 3 games Friday, not to mention my trip to Washington, D.C. to see if the Packers can figure something out with their season, but yes, it'll be a very football-heavy show on Tuesday.
I saw that you went to Tennessee. That must have been a fun trip for you. Great football down there.
Oh, it was great. That was just so fun the whole time. Nothing wrong with it. My goodness.
Since we have a moratorium on Packers talk on this podcast, we'll move right along to the Badgers.
Yes, we do.
The Badgers they've had an interesting week. So they had a victory over Illinois that came as expected by a lopsided margin, which was nice. Then the bowl standings came out Tuesday night. The Badgers were still 7th despite a slew of upsets, and I know that, you know, people shouldn't be panicking because the Big Ten championship game will, in theory, be a pretty good opponent that will boost Wisconsin's standing in the end. But I know there were some people who were disappointed to see them not really move up anywhere in those rankings. And then the basketball team, a top 10 team, lost Tuesday night to Creighton on the road in a kind of an ugly, ugly loss. So a little bit of an up and down week for the Badge.
Yeah, I just know that as a Iowa fan who watched last year and watched the college football playoff rankings, just know that they mean absolutely nothing until December 6th or 5th, whatever that Tuesday is.
Yeah, there was some crazy movement at the end last year.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, it means nothing right now. If you're 7th, it doesn't matter, because if you lose to Purdue or Minnesota, nothing is even relevant for you anymore. And if you beat Purdue, Minnesota, and then maybe Penn State or Michigan, well, then it doesn't matter if you were 7th before, because you're going to be in 3rd in a couple weeks. So just please, anyone listening to this who hasn't already made up their mind, please just don't care about it. I beg of you.
I said this on the Time Warner Cable Roundtable, and I mean it even more now that I see that Ohio State is in 2nd, because this is what I think about what the rankings tell me now. If Ohio State doesn't end up in the Big Ten championship game, if they beat Michigan and win the rest of their games and Penn State wins the rest of their games, they're going to lose that tiebreaker to Penn State. Penn State's going to go play, in theory, Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game. I'm worried, though, that as Ohio State is right now the number 2 team and will not be losing again in this scenario, that they would keep their spot and get to be in that Final Four, and then the committee doesn't take the winner of the Big Ten championship game, namely Wisconsin, because they'll already have a Big Ten school slotted in there. I am nervous that that is the scenario we're facing. And I mean, how can you just drop the number 2 team out of there without them losing again? And that's right now the one big concern I have. I'll be cheering for Michigan to beat them so that Michigan can end up playing Wisconsin in the title game, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, you look at Ohio State's resume. They have the Oklahoma win. They would have a win over Michigan in that scenario. They will have lost to Penn State, and they will have beaten Wisconsin. So if you want to talk, should Ohio State be in there over Wisconsin, I'm probably going to say yes. Just because Wisconsin won the West Division doesn't mean that they should be in there over Ohio State because they didn't win their division. I mean, they have the head-to-head. So, there's so much that can happen there. I don't think the committee is averse to taking two Big Ten teams either, whether that's, you know, Ohio State and Penn State, or if it's Ohio State-Wisconsin or something like that. I mean, I'm just not going to get in a bind over it, because I know that so many things can still happen.
Let's end our podcast with our interview with Chris McIntosh, who is in the athletics office, as we said, one of the underlings of Barry Alvarez at the University of Wisconsin, one of the top underlings. He's in charge of some of the business aspects of what Wisconsin does, and we talk about that. We talk about how he sort of worked on the arrangement with Under Armour and other sponsors, other big-time promoters of Wisconsin athletics. We talk about his days at Pewaukee, some of the controversies surrounding the Badger football team, including Big Ten games on Friday nights, the student athlete activism we've seen on campus, and how that affects them and what they do. I'm trying to think of what else we talked about. We should just play it, I suppose, huh?
Pretty much everything. I listened to it before the show today, and he has a fascinating perspective on that. He is involved in a lot of things. There's Pewaukee connections, Badger connections, NFL connections, and then his current Wisconsin connections. So it's a good interview. Give it some time, and I'll let you take the rest of the show. So I will say goodbye to all of our friends, and thank you for listening to us as I sit here gloating, and I will make sure to gloat in JR's face in person on Friday for State football. We're already there, man.
All right, JP. Well, I look forward to that.
Yes, I can tell. All right, we'll see you Friday, and we'll see the rest of you guys later.
My guest you may know from a number of areas, former Pewaukee High School standout, University of Wisconsin offensive lineman, NFL draft pick, and now back at Madison in the athletics department, Chris McIntosh, who was gracious enough to chat a little bit. Lots going on in the world of UW athletics. And Chris, my understanding is you're the next Barry. Are you the Barry in waiting? Is that how we should refer to you?
I would prefer that you not refer to me as the next Barry in waiting.
Yeah, I know. That's a little tongue in cheek, of course.
Yeah. I'll say this. We were thrilled not long ago when Barry kind of renewed his 5-year contract with the university. Yeah. And so that provided some clarity and a little bit of certainty, and that goes a long way usually.
Right. So you're on the business side in the athletics office. Can you kind of give a sense of what your role is and what your sort of day-to-day responsibilities are?
Yeah, you know, day-to-day, I help manage our partnerships, and that is with our corporate partners mostly in the form of our sponsorships and also with our direct partners. Under Armour is a good example of one of those that's easily kind of understood. But, you know, our licensing partner, our sports beverage partner, our sports drink partner, Aspire, our retail partners, Fanatics, and Gold Country here at Bucky's Locker Room, so on and so forth.
How involved were you, I'm trying to, just from a timeline perspective, when you got there, from this with the switch to Under Armour from, you know, from what they had before, was that a lengthy process? Was that sort of a move that had been many years in the making, or was it just a pretty quick change and maybe just sensing what's going on in college athletics in general and just deciding to move in that direction?
You know, I think, you know, so Adidas was a long-standing partner of Wisconsin Athletics. And, you know, the contract came up, and I think Coach Alvarez wanted to kind of just pick his head up and figuratively and get a sense for what opportunity was out there in the market. And so, you know, there's not a lot of players there in that category, and we really had a feel for what Adidas could provide to us, and you know that left the need for a couple of other conversations to be had. But obviously, one of which was with Under Armour. So I was you know, fortunate enough to be involved on the front end of that, and we got a sense for what Under Armour kind of stood for, what they're all about. It's interesting, you know. All of the conversations early on had nothing to do with the financial terms of the deal. All of the conversations were everything to do with how their brand fit with our brand and how we could help each other create value for each other in a long-term partnership. It's interesting, you know, their story is one that bears a lot of resemblance to kind of the Barry Alvarez era here at Wisconsin, kind of coming from nothing and building a contender. And so they're, you know, scrappy and hungry and kind of grinders. And they share their DNA. Well, let me put it this way. Their DNA is very similar to ours. Mm-hmm. So it became very comfortable early on.
So the Badgers have been in the news for a lot of reasons lately, you know, some very good, some sort of controversial, and I'll touch on that. But I want to flash back, first of all, to your days, your roots in Pewaukee. You know, there was a time when you were the one and only NFL draft selection out of Pewaukee High School, and then the Watt family came along and started producing all these NFL players. So they,
yeah,
they kind of stole your thunder a little bit, didn't they?
You know, I was a big deal in Pewaukee, so JJ came along. So I've had to change my story. You know, I like to say now that I was the one that, you know, blazed the trail for JJ to head down. So I'm quick to say, I only say that when he's not around.
Yes, yes, he's a large man.
No, I think it's great. You know, Pewaukee, if I'm not mistaken, I think I believe I was the first athletic scholarship granted to student athlete from Pewaukee High School, and you know, that was a long time ago, and I think it's great to see how Pewaukee has improved over the years. They've become you know, very competitive in a lot of sports beyond just football now, and it's great to see. And you know, when you see the success of, you know, the Watt family you mentioned and a couple others along the way, I don't know, it makes me proud, to know that, you know, there's opportunity for kids that can, you know, plug into Pewaukee High School and follow the program that they offer and the plan that they put before kids, and that, you know, kids can be really successful if they do that. But I think it's fantastic.
The football team made it to level four for the first time in school history this past year and came one step away from the state final. How close were any of your teams? Did you have any football teams that worked fairly deep into the playoffs?
Playoffs? no, far from it. You know, I think we were 5-4 almost every year that I was there, and you know, it was a different process then. But you know, we weren't anywhere near making it into the playoffs back then. So I think I'm really happy for those kids and the program, and I think it's great for the school.
Badgers football has also made quite a bit of strides since even you were there. I mean, and not just in football, top 10 football program, top 10 basketball. You know, the volleyball team is maybe the best in the nation, cross country, you know, women's hockey, all very elite programs. It's gotta be a lot of fun being in the UW Athletics office these days, huh?
It is. It's very exciting. You know, I think it's as an alumni, as someone that went through the program here, and this isn't just limited, I'm not just limiting it to football, but I'll just say the athletic program here, I think it's just, it's so exciting. You know, it seems like we do our finest kind of shines when the odds are against us, and, you know, this was one of those types of football seasons, and, you know, these kids are battling and they're being rewarded for it. And they've placed their trust in a great head coach and coaching staff and in each other. And, they've taken on a philosophy or mentality that, you know, has been really effective, and they've been able to kind of eliminate the external distractions and just focus on what's important. And that is the guys in that locker room and how they play on Saturdays, and week by week, gets more and more exciting. You know, Barry used to say, you know, winning makes each game become bigger and bigger, and the opportunity becomes more and more significant. And, you know, with each week that plays out, you see that unfold for football. But, you know, it's not just limited to football here right now. And so it seems like, you know, there's, you don't go more than 2 or 3 days without one of our programs competing and being in contention. So it's been fantastic. Our kids have bought in across all the sports and kind of really understand how the formula for success here at Wisconsin. It's different than other places.
Yeah, and as we move closer to the football playoff selection, I'm personally a little concerned just that the Wisconsin brand isn't still seen at the same level as a Michigan or Ohio State, at least as football goes, just by tradition. And I'm constantly not sure if that's fair or not. I don't know if there's anything that can really be done about that. I don't know if it'll play a role whatsoever in the selection process, but it's sort of this nagging thought in the back of my head that if it comes down to a choice between Michigan, Ohio State, and Wisconsin, do you go with Michigan and Ohio State because they've got this track record of success? And do you guys think about that at all? Do you worry that Wisconsin just doesn't get credit, and does that matter to you? And is there anything you can do about it other than, you know, have this team win, have this program win 6 national championships to get that respect? I mean, I don't know what more Wisconsin could really do.
Yeah. I don't think it's something that we spend a lot of time thinking about. You know, if you limit the conversation to football and you talk about these storied programs like Michigan or Ohio State, you know, you quickly realize that while the last 20, 25 years here has been a great turnaround, you know, there's another 75 years ahead of us before we catch up to, you know, the kind of collective resumes of those programs.
Sure.
And that's, you know, it's just going to take a long time for that to happen. I do feel confident, though, given the process that the selection committee goes through, that they don't take into account the strength of the Michigan team or the Ohio State team from 35 years ago. I think, you know, there's a process in place now that is objective and subjective. It's the right balance of decision making that at least in the last couple of years here has provided or presented rather the true accurate kind of candidates for what will become a 14 playoff. So anyways, that's kind of a long way of saying, you know, what has made us successful here is, this goes back to Barry, and this is just kind of a cornerstone of his philosophy and one of the values of our team, and it's as simple as focus on what you can control and eliminate the distractions.
Sure.
So, you know, you hear Paul talk about it every Monday in a press conference. All that our kids can do and our coaches can do is focus on, you know, what they're doing right now. And what they're doing right now is they're preparing for Purdue. And,
right.
You know, it's all for naught if they don't take care of their business in West Lafayette.
True, yeah. One thing Wisconsin's become known for the past few months is student-athlete activism. I think Nigel Hayes on the basketball team has been the most visible. He's spoken out at times against the NCAA system, and he was one of many people who spoke out against the decision to allow a fan with an offensive costume stay in his seat at a recent football game, the initial response from the university. And many athletes, also him included, released a joint statement about sort of the perception of black athletes on campus, which was also very powerful. I'm sure the mission at UW embraces students and athletes speaking their mind, exercising their voices. And at the same time, I imagine it can get a little uncomfortable for administrators. It could be a slippery slope. I mean, we've seen activism all over the country have noble intentions and devolve into potentially damaging words and actions. How do you approach that balance? How does the administration approach that balance of providing a platform and allowing them to be activists and exercising their voice, but also still protecting the university and preventing anything from getting out of hand?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting times right now. You know, first and foremost, you know, just as a kind of a tangible example, the statement that was released by our student athletes last week, Monday, you know, serves as a great example of something that we're really proud of here. We've got, the benefit of having, you know, almost 900, student athletes here that, are not only capable athletes and capable students, but they're really smart people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first and foremost, they are people that come from a wide range of backgrounds and experiences. And, you know, one of the most beautiful things about athletics is that you feel the team and fill a locker room with people that are very diverse and come from a very wide range of experiences, and that provides life lessons that benefit all our kids, myself included, for a lifetime. So that's always existed. Now, you know, there are societal dynamics today that differ than they did not long ago. And many of our student athletes feel compelled to be active in that and say something, and that's what we support. We have made a concerted effort to have very open lines of communication with our student athletes, both mainly through the coaching staffs, and you know, our priority is to make sure that our student athletes understand that what they say and do carries with it, that they're responsible for what they say and do. Mm-hmm. And we'll help them any way we can, and we want them to understand both the short and kind of long-term consequences beyond, I'm not referring to athletic consequences, for their actions. And in the same way that I might counsel my own kids to help them formulate a decision that they feel is the right one for them, it's the same kind of conversation that we're having with our student athletes.
Sure.
And being respectful of the fact that, you know, some of their experiences and what they see and how they feel are so strong that they're willing to take into consideration some of those consequences.
So the other controversy that's popped up, not really a Wisconsin thing, is the Big Ten, more the Big Ten, hosting Friday night games. Next year, the Badgers will open on September 1st, which is a Friday night, third week of the high school season. I've written that it's not that big a deal. Many of my colleagues feel it is a little bit of they have expressed disappointment with sort of that overlap. Many coaches in the state have expressed it, that there's disappointment, there's an overlap with the high school game. How do you look at it? That's not Wisconsin's call per se, but they're a Big Ten. They're participating in that. Do you worry about that they would be interfering a little bit with the high school game?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm certainly sensitive to some of the opinions that have been expressed, but I do think that there's a misconception that, you know, there's going to be Friday night football and that Saturday football is going to be minimized or done away with. You know, I think what's misunderstood is that we're talking about six total games on Friday nights. Right. Six total games, you know, over the course of a season, 14 teams in competition. So, you know, for us, it's limited to Labor Day weekend or Thanksgiving, the week of Thanksgiving. And we felt that that was... you know, Coach Alvarez felt that that was a reasonable compromise to make with the conference. Other teams have taken different positions, and that's, you know, that's their right to do so. But, you know, I think what's lost, though, is that, you know, what we're talking about here is six total games conference-wide. And, you know, I think if you look at it through that lens, it may not be as big of a deal as some are thinking it is.
Okay, so I promise it's not all controversy, but one last one. The student section at Camp Randall has been under fire for the last few years. A lot of people pointing out that it doesn't fill up right away or it doesn't get full for all the games. I'm guessing the athletics department has discussed that before. I don't know, have there been discussions about changing the ticket policy to make it general admission or I don't know, recruit more students to get there earlier? Maybe it's not the type of thing that really the athletic department could do anything about. Maybe it's not even a big issue. I don't know. How do you guys look at that issue?
You know, so it's one that, you know, catches our attention, that's for sure. But I think, you know, to provide some context, it's certainly not a new challenge. You know, 20 years ago when I was, you know, when I took the field, the same problem or challenge existed. And, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows. You know, big games, most recently Nebraska, Ohio State, the student section fills up very early, and there wasn't an issue. Early games, you know, it takes a little longer. We would certainly prefer that the students were there as close to kickoff as possible. It's a competitive advantage for us that they do so. When we're on the road and we're playing in stadiums where the same challenge exists, it makes it a little easier to be the visiting team. And, you know, Camp Randall has long tradition of being a very tough place to play. You know, it's tougher in the fourth quarter than it is in the first quarter many times. And, it's our preference that it'd be tough to play for four quarters.
Sure.
Here at Camp Randall.
So I don't mean to put you in a bad situation and to ask you if you are still a Seattle Seahawks fan, as you did play for them in the NFL, of course, and they got a whale of a victory Sunday night. I'm kind of just curious about your level of engagement with the NFL in general. I mean, they've come under fire too for the concussions, the ratings being down. I mean, there's always I think people looking to bring down the NFL to some degree. How are you still? I mean, are you still a fan? Do you feel the product has changed since you've been in the league? Maybe for the worse, maybe for the better.
Yeah, I think so. You know, the game of football in general is changing, and I think it's changing for the better. You know, never has there been an awareness to player safety like there is today. And that's not to say that we've arrived at a place where player safety needs to be. I think there'll be ongoing improvements and advances in player safety. But, you know, just speaking from personal experience, player safety today is well ahead of where it was just a short time ago. Mm-hmm. Personally, my last year in the NFL was 2002. That was the first year for baseline concussion protocol. That wasn't a long time ago. So right. They're making progress in player safety. I don't really pay attention or spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, the TV ratings in the NFL. I think that's a story that is one that's premature.
Sure.
You know, there's kind of one data point of this season. And we'll see, you know, time will tell if that becomes a trend or not. But, you know, the NFL is in the business of providing an experience, and so part of that experience is an in-venue experience to fans. And, you know, I don't read a lot about, though I don't really pay close attention to, declining attendance within their venues. And, you know, it's an interesting year, election year, so on and so forth. And so, you know, I think time will tell in terms of the trending for their TV viewership.
Right.
Other than that, I grew up here in Wisconsin. I grew up as a Packer fan. I obviously played for Seattle. I lived outside of Denver. And while I don't report to be, you know, an avid NFL fan, I do kind of pay attention and root for the home team, the team in the market in which I live.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's nicer. It's nice to come to work on Monday and everybody's kind of happy because the Packers won the day before. So it's kind of, my motivation is admittedly self-serving.
Sure. Yeah, and you talk about the ratings. That Seattle New England game got pretty good eyeballs count, so
yeah.
So it might be bouncing back a little bit.
Yep.
Kind of to wrap this up then, I'm just kind of curious how you got to where you are, because you've taken a very interesting path. You were, I think, in real estate for a while. You're in charge of a Delafield of Fitness and Wellness Center. I think you were involved with the Dirty Girl Mud Run for a while. I mean, were you on a business track in college that you were going to maybe do this sort of thing after your playing career was over? Or was this, is there any way to draw a line between what happened in college to getting where you are now?
You know, I think, you know, so my professional career to date has been very entrepreneurial. And my experience has been very broad. And I've had the benefit of, I've been fortunate enough to be part of creating brands and really trying to connect with consumers in the marketplace and provide value. It's caused me to develop a skill set, I guess, for lack of a better term, to really try to be in tune and think empathetically with what our customer experiences and our partners experience. And I think it's for me, it's been a really fascinating path. And I think that's a skill that is applicable in all different industries and categories. And so, you know, when I had the opportunity to come back here to University of Wisconsin, work for Barry, it wasn't very long before I was able to apply that same, look at the business that we are in through that lens. That is what, you know, what do our fans experience? What do our, you know, donors experience? What do our corporate partners experience? How can we improve? How can we enhance the value that we deliver to them? But most importantly, and my history here makes it easy for me to do so, look through the lens of what is or how it is that our, how are our student athletes experiencing this mm-hmm. 4 or 5 year time here at Wisconsin. And it provides me with a unique perspective, not one that's better or worse than anybody else's, but I just see things in a little different light. And I'll tell you, you know, I had a lot of fun and had some really rewarding moments in my career thus far, really exciting times, but I've never felt more connected with the ultimate kind of purpose of my work as I do here at Wisconsin. It's something that my experience here as a student athlete, that 5 year experience, it changed who I became as a person. It influenced the direction that my life took. It's such an influence on who I am today. It's a very powerful experience. It equipped me with skills that I acquired, you know, beyond just those that my degree provided. And it's one that I'm passionate about. So, you know, I'm passionate about making sure that, you know, the approximately 900 student-athletes that are here under our watch and that have been, you know, entrusted to us by their parents to develop and shape them, that's something I take very seriously, and that's something I get really passionate about.
All right, Chris, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it, and there's some fun Badger sports ahead here, so I know you'll be having a good time. We'll be having a good time watching. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff.